Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Greetings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, the Alpine Avalanche, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading from the Big Bend Sentinel. The Big Bend Sentinel. Coronavirus puts strain on local food pantries. By Stephen Paulson, May 6th, 2020. Tri-County. As the coronavirus crisis stretches on, demand at local food pantries continues to creep up. From Marfa to Jeff Davis County, workers at food pantries in the Tri-County say they're still seeing regular increases in visitors. Few expect those numbers to fall back down anytime soon as economic fallout from coronavirus continues. This is a marathon, said Peggy O'Brien, a volunteer at the Marfa food pantry, not a sprint. Meanwhile, food pantries are also coping with other disruptions brought on by coronavirus. They're implementing social distancing rules for volunteers and switching up distribution plans to minimize contact with consumers. And with demand surging across the region, food pantry workers said fresh produce is no longer always a reliable part of deliveries from the West Texas Food Bank, which supplies Tri-County food pantries. Now pantries are looking for other sources of fresh vegetables and fruits, from finding other suppliers to simply growing it themselves. In Jeff Davis County, the local food pantries have started buying produce in bulk, just as grocery stores might do. We're paying wholesale prices for fresh produce, said Vicki Gibson, executive director of the food pantry of Jeff Davis County. It's a significant hit to our budget. Demand for services at the Jeff Davis County food pantries is still increasing, Gibson says, though not as much as it was during the first 2 or 3 weeks of the shutdown. The biggest increase has been in the Pack a Lunch program for school kids, Gibson said, but the demand for the food pantry's regular service has also grown from around 100 households at the start of the year to 120 now. The food pantry in Valentine has seen similar increases. It started the year serving 18 households and now serves around 22. Those numbers may seem modest, but for us that's big, Gibson said. We didn't have many households to start with. Aside from increased numbers, the Jeff Davis food pantries have seen other changes. They've gone from client choice, where patrons can browse the aisles and pick out food items like a regular grocery store, to pick up only. And whereas the West Texas Food Bank once sent bulk supplies of food, it now sends pre-packed boxes for families, Gibson said. That saves volunteers in Jeff Davis County time, but also reduces the amount of food each family receives, from over 25 pounds on an average before the crisis to around 22. We're trying to compensate for them getting fewer items and not having a choice by giving them healthy, fresh food, Gibson said. But with fewer supplies of fresh food from the food bank, finding other supplies for it is proving expensive. In Alpine, demand at the local food pantry has leveled out after rising at the start of a local shelter-in-place orders, said Jan Moeller, a board member and the store manager. She suspects the number could rise as shelter-in-place orders end, as maybe people will be getting out more. But it isn't all bad news. The food pantry has also seen an outpouring of support from tomatoes from Village Farms to monetary donations from residents. A few weeks ago, Mueller said a man stopped by to drop off a couple hundred dollars. It was an anonymous donation. He told Mueller he didn't want credit. Marfa is also seeing an increase in demand, said Genevieve Basham, executive director of the local food pantry. The pantry is now serving around 90 families, up from 84 last month, Basham said. To handle the demand, the pantry announced this week it would start distributing food twice a month, on the first and third Thursdays of each month. Still, getting fresh food is challenging, said Peggy O'Brien, the volunteer, and it's going to get more challenging. To help supplement deliveries from the West Texas Food Bank, the Marfa Food Pantry is ramping up produce in its garden, O'Brien said. She was getting ready to harvest a crop of garlic shoots and spinach. In Presidio, the West Texas Food Bank runs a monthly food distribution program. It's our biggest distribution, said Greg Clark, a senior manager at the West Texas Food Bank, which serves 19 counties. On typically the last Friday of each month, the food bank takes an 18-wheeler, box truck, and a few staff members down to the border city. There, they're joined by typically around a dozen local volunteers. Demand in Presidio has picked up a little bit during coronavirus, Clark said. The food bank is now serving around 420 Presidio families compared to around 350 or 375 before the coronavirus crisis. It's a lot of food, Clark said. When cars line up to pick up boxes, it looks like an old drive-in movie theater. Overall, the West Texas Food Bank has seen 47% increase in demand, Clark said. But that still pales in comparison to demand increases in the Midland-Odessa area, where the West Texas Food Bank distributes locally, and where an oil shock and other economic woes have seen in-house food demand surge a whopping 400%. The National Guard has sent 14 guardsmen to the facility to help with increase in orders, and the food bank is now sending around 3,000 prepackaged boxes of food every week to area pantries, Clark said. Pantries in the Tri-County area are doing a super job, adjusting to the increased demand and other challenges, Clark added. I couldn't compliment them more. Asked about the reported shortage of fresh produce, Clark acknowledged there is no consistency as the food bank competes with stores like HEB and Walmart for produce trucks from the Rio Grande Valley. We live in a produce desert, he added. Going forward, though, Clark said there will soon be more fresh produce going to local pantries. We're blessed to be getting a lot of produce in, he said, but there may be a month or two when we just can't get it. Government. Marfa reopens or not. By Stephen Paulson, May 6, 2020. Marfa. Visitors are trickling into Marfa hotels again after Governor Greg Abbott's reopening plan began on Friday. Abbott's order overruled a range of local emergency measures across the state, including face mask requirements and the Tri-County's temporary bans on short-term rentals. But among the many signs that life in Marfa hasn't returned to normal, there's a lengthy note Hotel Paisano is sending to anyone with reservations. Dear valued guests, it reads, at this time in our nation's history, it is more important than ever that we consider each other as we venture from the safety of our homes. It asks guests to seriously consider whether they've had any coronavirus symptoms or contact with a patient and to not travel to Marfa at this time if they do. It lists the many disruptions in Marfa. Most, if not all, galleries are closed. And at the hotel, we are not able to offer housekeeping. And it asks visitors to please adhere to social distancing if they encounter any residents. If, after reading these announcements, you would like to choose not to visit at this time, we certainly understand and ask that you call the front desk to reschedule your reservation. The letter ends. Until we see or hear from you, we wish you health and safety. And so began the reopening in Marfa, not with a bang, but with a few visitors from places like California and Austin. Bars and art galleries are closed. Few, if any, restaurants are seating customers. Some hotels have opened, but are seeing a fraction of the tourists they might normally see. Of the few visitors that are still arriving, most aren't staying for long, said Jose Pratt, manager at Thunderbird. Most people are traveling from California and Austin and need to stay here for the night. They're en route to somewhere else. Governor Greg Abbott's reopening plan goes against the advice of some health experts who say it's too soon to open, as well as the will of most Texans. 77% of Texans are in favor of stay-at-home restrictions, a University of Texas, Texas Tribune poll found last week, including 69% of Republicans. In announcing his plans last week, Abbott said his order is permission to open, not a requirement. But that permission does not extend to local communities attempting to govern themselves. In Marfa and Presidio County, local officials decided to continue their bans on short-term rentals even after Abbott's order. But those efforts were thwarted after a spokesperson for Abbott called Presidio County Judge Cinderella Guevara and demanded the county reverse course. The hotel bans weren't the only local emergency measures to fall victim to Abbott's order. Abbott also overruled face mask requirements across the state, including in major cities like Houston and San Antonio and in Presidio. At a Presidio City Council meeting last week, Antonio Manriquez, a Presidio City Council member, captured how some Tri-County residents are feeling about the mandatory loosening of restrictions. We are casualties of war, he said. We are dispensable. Even for workers and businesses that permission might not exactly be voluntary, with a few exceptions, people on unemployment can't keep collecting unemployment if their workplaces reopen, no matter how uneasy they may feel about returning to work. Small business owners are in a similar bind. Businesses don't have to reopen, but if they do, they may not have latitude to let worried workers stay at home. That's because the Paycheck Protection Program, which threw a lifeline to businesses during the coronavirus crisis, requires companies to make rehires. With or without the state opening, many restaurants in Marfa have decided for now to keep doing pickup and delivery only, as the Big Bend Sentinel reported last week. It's way too soon, Sabine Fleiss, owner of brunch and lunch spot Aster, said of the prospect of opening in a phone interview. Barbecue Eatery Convenience West likewise said in a social media post that it'd make the tough decision not to reopen dine-in service yet. Also still closed, cultural institutions. The Judge and Shinati Foundations aren't opening yet, nor are most local art galleries and shops. Nor are other institutions like schools, which the state has ordered closed for the rest of the academic year, or churches. Gary Dill, pastor at the First Presbyterian Church of Marfa, said many church leaders are instead choosing to stay closed. I don't think any church in Marfa is starting anything up, he said. He estimated local churches will continue virtual services for around the next 4 weeks. What has opened, though, are some hotels and short-term rentals. Thunderbird Hotel has reopened, though manager Jose Pratt said that just a few visitors are trickling in. It was a tough decision for sure, he said of the hotel's reopening, adding that he worried the Thunderbird could have gone under if stayed closed any longer. When you have a business like this, every day you stay closed gets harder to reopen, he said. The hotel is operating with a skeleton staff and has adopted a number of safety protocols, he said, including closing the lounge, limiting office visits to one person at a time, and limiting the number of rooms they would rent. Unlike restaurants and some other businesses, Texas hotels do not have to follow any mandatory occupancy limits. At the Hotel Paisano, owners Joe and Lana Duncan also decided to reopen after Texas' stay-at-home order expired. But the hotel was also taking precautions, including requiring staff to wear masks, temporarily ending housekeeping service, and imposing a voluntary 25% on occupancy, said General Manager Vicky Barge. With occupancy limits or not, local hotels say normally high demand for tourist accommodation simply hasn't returned yet. People are not necessarily saying, let's go out and travel, Pratt said. We don't have that level of demand. Still, the prospect of visitors returning as coronavirus is sweeping across the country and many Marfans are sheltering at home has given some the impression of a town under siege. At Bad Ombres, a group of tourists yanked on the door hard enough to break the latch, then yelled at waitstaff before storming off and writing a bad online review, said owner David Beebe. Beebe ended up nailing the door shut. The Leto, a New York-based dance company, prompted internet outrage over the weekend after it announced it was planning an event in Marfa. Please stay the hell away from our safe community, council member Raul Laura said on Facebook. The company quickly reversed course, canceling the event and apologizing. When the Hotel Paisano opened up, one of their first reservations came from a family in Amarillo, said General Manager Vicky Barge. Potter County, where Amarillo sits, so far has around 900 coronavirus cases. One of the family's kids has asthma, and they were desperate to get out. In a sense, the reopening in Marfa is a test. Whereas state leaders had been deciding how to balance public safety with economic needs, they now have abdicated that responsibility and are leaving regular citizens themselves to grapple with those tough decisions. Questions like, how does a small business owner balance the needs of their struggling business against the health and safety of the community? And what's the limit to Marfa's hospitality? These questions have already caused tension in Marfa. The shutdown has certainly been hard for businesses, and stories about kids with asthma pull on heartstrings. On the other hand, the more visitors arrive, the less likely Marfa is to stay a relative refuge from coronavirus. City. We are dispensable. Presidio city leaders slam Texas reopening. By Stephen Paulson, May 6, 2020. Presidio. City leaders in Presidio have spent weeks formulating guidance designed to keep their constituents safe from the coronavirus, from limiting non-essential visitors to requiring face coverings for employees and shoppers at stores. But with Governor Greg Abbott's decision last week to overrule local emergency orders as part of his plan to reopen Texas, all those plans and discussions went out the window. And when city leaders met virtually on Wednesday to discuss their next moves, some city officials could barely contain their frustration and anger. "We are going to be casualties of war," City Councilman Antonio Manriquez said during the meeting. "That's what the governor said. We're old, we're dispensable." Alcy Tavares, Mayor Pro Tem for the Border City, likewise said that the message of Governor Abbott's order was that state leadership doesn't give a crap about you. Tavares said that Abbott was listening to knuckleheads who oppose stay-at-home orders over the vast majority of Texans who support such measures. 77% of Texans are in favor of stay-at-home restrictions, according to a University of Texas Texas Tribune poll from last week. "You've got a governor that's listening to the 20% instead of the 80% he should be listening to," Tavares said. "You can put that in the record. I don't give a crap. That's how strongly I feel." The strongest criticism during the meeting came from Manriquez and Tavares, who noted that as older people, they face an increased risk of death or serious illness from coronavirus. But those observations could just as easily apply to their constituents as well. Almost 25% of Presidio City residents are over the age of 65, according to census data. Meanwhile, around 40% of the city lives below the poverty line, another risk factor for coronavirus, in part because low-income people are less likely to have health insurance and more likely to have other health issues. Other Presidio City leaders weren't as noticeably frustrated, but virtually all expressed displeasure with Governor Abbott's new rules, if also resignation. "We did what was right," Councilman Irvin Olivas said of Presidio's local emergency rules. Councilman Sam Carrasco likewise said Presidio's measures were really done in good faith, but added, "We do need to follow the governor's lead." "I totally agree with all of you," Rogelio Zubia told his frustrating fellow council members. However, Governor Abbott's reopening order was a top-down decision. "If we continue to focus on what we think should happen, we're just going to go crazy," he added. "We just have to move on." The rest of the meeting had a feeling of hopelessness to it, as city leaders tried to brainstorm ways to protect Presidio from coronavirus without running afoul of Governor Abbott's orders. Mayor Pro Tem Tavares pondered whether "no shirt, no shoes, no service" signs could instead be changed to "no shoes, no shirt, no mask, you can't come into the store." "No," said City Attorney Rod Ponton, "that would be left up to individual stores." "That's a private decision," Ponton said. "Y'all are dealing with a public decision as a council." After determining that Abbott's order had left them with few options, the new rules even prevent cities from fining people for not wearing face coverings. City leaders instead discussed community-based mitigation efforts, including not shopping at stores that didn't take precautions. "For those of us who want to protect ourselves and our families, we can vote with our wallets," said Mayor John Ferguson. "That doesn't have to come in the form of the law." In the end, Presidio officials decided to circulate the state's guidance to businesses, but not to enact an additional emergency order, instead deferring to the state's guidelines. They briefly considered holding their next meeting in person, but decided against it. Councilman Irvin Olivas said holding a virtual meeting would better get the message out to everybody that we are taking this seriously. "And if the meeting is held in person, some city council members said they won't attend." "I will not be attending the meeting," Tavares said of the proposed in-person council meeting. "I'm sorry, but I like living." City. Hacker interrupts remote Alpine City Council meeting. By Jim Street, May 6, 2020. Alpine. The City of Alpine has instituted some precautions to deal with objectionable interruptions at the last two City Council meetings conducted by livestream. A crude racial image came up at a called meeting on April 29th, only a few minutes into session. At an earlier meeting on April 24th, what Mayor Andy Ramos called a derogatory comment appeared. City Manager Eric Zimmer said that this week, the city has tightened the guidelines so guests can only appear by logging on with a Zoom account. Basically, we have disabled screen sharing, and people have to have a Zoom account and cannot go through on Google or Facebook, he said. We have configured it so they have to authenticate through Zoom, and we can pull up the IP address where it comes from and know who it is and what account they have registered through Zoom. Zimmer said people are getting in through Google or Facebook and provide a fake name, and the 2 points of scoping do not provide an accurate identification. Last week, medical consultant Dr. Ekta Escobar was presenting a PowerPoint presentation about the latest statistics on the coronavirus epidemic when Councilor Rick Stevens asked, "Ekta, what happened to your graphics?" At that point, a reporter watching on Zoom still saw Dr. Escobar's slide showing 3 charts, while apparently others saw a black screen. Gradually, the 3 charts went away one by one until the screen was blank, and then the hacked racial image appeared. Immediately, another graphic appeared saying the meeting was terminated by the host. The meeting continued, limited to the council and staff. Mayor Andy Ramos said after the meeting that Finance Director Megan Antrim is responsible for the waiting room and can control what commoners can be accepted. The waiting room is a virtual room where people wait in line until they are called on to speak. Ramos said he thinks he knows the identity of the hacker and can deny him the ability to present. Open meetings laws allows public bodies to deny disruptive speakers from attending future meetings, so they can also block participation in a virtual meeting. City Attorney Rod Ponton said the matter is under investigation. He said he could file charges of interference with the public meeting, breach of computer security, or online harassment. Ramos said at the meeting, council heard the remainder of the update from Dr. Escobar and then reaffirmed that its earlier order was terminated effective the next day, April 30th. That order said that residents should stay at home except for necessary shopping and exercise. It had also closed all but essential businesses, including hotels, motels, and other overnight rentals, including RV parks and campgrounds. Businesses began opening last Friday under Governor Greg Abbott's executive order released on Monday, April 27th. As Alpine Council meeting was winding down this Tuesday, Councilor Rick Stevens congratulated Finance Director Megan Antrim, the gatekeeper, for called-in comments because there were no interruptions like the last 2 meetings. It is possible some of the protections put in place work to prevent any interlopers' offensive outbursts.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing the Big Ben Sentinel. Government. Gage lawsuits continue as hotels reopen. By Stephen Paulson, published on May 6th. Marathon. Local orders shuttering Tri-County hotels may have ended, but the lawsuits brought by one prominent hotel owner aren't over just yet. J.P. Bryan, a Houston businessman and owner of the Gage Hotel in Marathon, sued Brewster County in March over an order closing hotels and short-term rentals. The lawsuit, which named Brewster County Judge Eleazar Cano and multiple Brewster County commissioners as defendants. The lawsuit, which named Brewster County Judge Eleazar Cano and multiple Brewster County commissioners as defendants, argued that county leaders had not identified an emergency or urgent public necessity for closing the hotels and had not properly posted a meeting to discuss the rules. Bryan asked the court for a temporary restraining order halting the emergency closures, as well as economic damages, which his lawyers estimated as $100,000 or less. News of the suit prompted outrage by some in the Tri-County, and the local justice system didn't view it much more favorably. The same day the lawsuit was filed, Judge Roy Ferguson, then the judge on the case, tossed the request for a restraining order. Bryan withdrew his lawsuit a few days later, on April 3rd, but that wasn't the end of the legal wrangling. A few days later, he again sued over the order, this time in federal court. The new lawsuit, originally filed on April 10th, only named Brewster County Judge Eleazar Cano as a defendant. It made much the same arguments. Brewster County officials had not shown that COVID-19 was an imminent threat to the area, the suit argues, nor had officials considered any credible expert testimony to show it was. That presumably excludes Dr. Escobar, a member of the local COVID-19 task force and Brewster County's health authority, who has repeatedly discussed coronavirus with officials and the general public. Brian's lawyers have argued she should not be regarded as an expert. The lawsuit argues that county officials offered no evidence that non-essential visitors could spread COVID-19 to Brewster County residents. It also argues county officials didn't prove essential workers, who were still allowed to rent rooms, did not pose a threat to residents. The lawsuit also calls the emergency orders unconstitutional. It argues hotel closures amounted to unreasonable seizure of private property in violation of the Fourth Amendment. It also cites the 14th Amendment, which says that states can't deny to any person the equal protection of the laws. And yet Brian, as a hotel owner, was intentionally treated differently without any rational basis, the lawsuit argues. Because while Brian wasn't allowed to rent rooms to out-of-towners, other businesses in the area were still allowed to sell goods and services to all customers, including visitors and travelers from outside Brewster County. As Brian's lawsuits have progressed, the situation on the ground in Brewster County has changed dramatically. First, Governor Greg Abbott last week announced that Texas is moving toward a phased reopening of regular business. On Friday, he allowed statewide emergency orders to expire as scheduled and did not renew them. In a news conference announcing the move, Abbott stressed that his directive supersedes all local orders. Brewster County officials, in turn, allowed their hotel closure orders to expire. Second, coronavirus has gone from a threat to a reality. After weeks of watching coronavirus creep towards the region, Brewster County officials on Friday afternoon announced their first confirmed case of the disease. The patient, a South County resident in their 60s, tested positive for coronavirus during the Tri-County testing blitz last month. Officials have said they don't yet know how the individual was infected. In an Instagram post last week, the Gage Hotel announced it was reopening. "We are pleased to announce that we will welcome guests back to our historic hotel," the post read. The hotel's ancillary businesses, including a restaurant and coffee shop, will also reopen with limited occupancy and social distance seating. But while Brewster County can no longer order the Gage Hotel to close, Brian is still hoping to recoup financial losses from lost reservations during the emergency orders. "This is now a suit for damages," Frank Ainza, one of Brian's lawyers, said in a brief telephone interview on Monday. In an amended complaint from Friday, Brian's lawyers acknowledged that Brewster County's emergency orders have ended and that Brewster County now has at least one case of coronavirus. But they argue Brian is still owed at least $75,000 for the deprivation of his constitutional rights. Were it not for the emergency public health measures, they argue in court filings, Brian could have made more money. Before the closures, the Gage Hotel was on a projected trajectory of earning its highest net profit ever.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, April 30th. Holly nixes National Guard COVID testing. The Texas National Guard has scheduled mobile testing for the coronavirus to be in Monahans this Thursday. However, Ward County Judge Greg Holly has declined the testing. Holly said, quote, "Locally, testing is plentiful. We have a large supply of tests available. Our health care system is not currently strained at all. We're able to test everyone who needs testing. And, of course, so far we've had no confirmed cases of COVID-19. At the same time, I have concerns. I'm concerned about bringing 25 to 30 people into our community to conduct this one-day test. These workers will have traveled from county to county for several days interacting with symptomatic people in each place before arriving here. So, to me, the concerns outweigh the benefits. If limiting exposure is what's important, then it's important here as well." End quote. Holly added, quote, "I am still in talks with them, and there is a possibility this may still happen late next week or weekend." End quote. Commissioners vote to lessen restrictions. This story was written by Paul Cyphers. Ward County will begin relaxing COVID-19 restrictions in an effort to start the process of returning to normalcy, the county commissioners said in their regular meeting on Monday morning. The actions included reopening county offices to regular hours of 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. instead of the current 9 a.m. until noon. Effective date will be May 4th. Opening of libraries in each community will be decided by the librarian of each respective branch and the commissioner of that precinct. Judge Greg Holly said, quote, "It's just not right for big box stores to remain open while smaller mom-and-pop type establishments must be closed. That's terrible," end quote. Swimming pools and Ward County Event Center will remain closed until at least the end of May. Other actions may be forthcoming based on the orders from Texas Governor Greg Abbott, which was scheduled for Monday afternoon. Commissioners present were Tino Sanchez, Larry Hanna, Dexter Nichols, and Eddie Nelms. The commissioners and other essential county officials were present in the courtroom, but restricted to 10 people. Other participants joined via remote video or telephone link. In personnel actions, Melanie Nunez was hired as the new director of the Ward County Senior Center, effective on May 22nd, the day after current director April Forrest retires. Nunez has already been an employee of the Senior Center for the past several months. Her salary was set at $59,000 with full benefits. Willie Andino will serve as the weight officer for the Sheriff's Department, approximately 8 hours per week at a salary of $30 per hour, with retirement benefit only. Andino is also the new Veterans Affairs Officer for Ward County, as announced earlier this month. The service office will be open Thursdays from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. and 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., and other days as posted on the door of the office, located on the first floor of the Ward County Courthouse. Also in the sheriff's office, Logan Parsons and Cody Poor were hired as jailers at a salary of $1,900 biweekly with full benefits. Desiree Tarango was hired as a part-time cook, approximately 20 hours per week with retirement only. The oath of office and deputation of Deputy Jeffrey Asherbranner was also approved. Action for bids for the Monahans Library renovation was tabled until bids for all items could be received. Total of bids received so far was $839,000. Large dollar items not received included demolition and concrete work, electrical and structural steel labor. The project has been budgeted at $3 million. Stay-at-home order to end Thursday. Businesses open Friday. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Governor Greg Abbott will allow the stay-at-home order for the Lone Star State to expire Thursday, he said Monday, at a news conference. The plan involves three phases, the first of which begins on May 1st. The second phase could begin as early as May 18th, but only if there are two consecutive weeks with the absence of a flare-up of the virus in Texas. Phase 1 of the new executive orders, which superseded local orders, will allow businesses like retail stores, malls, restaurants, and theaters to reopen Friday at their discretion, but limits occupancy to 25%. The order will also allow libraries and museums to open, but are also limited to 25% occupancy at the county discretion. No interactive exhibits are to be open. Abbott said, quote, if things go well during phase one, phase two could begin in as soon as 2 weeks. He noted that he wants barbershops, salons, gyms, and bars open as soon as possible and expects them to open no later than mid-May. And City of Monahans Mayor David Cutbirth said, quote, Bennigan's, unfortunately, will not be able to open on Friday due to the late arrival of the new management and the need to rehire staff. We hope to reopen as soon as possible. Brian Heflin, owner of Furman's Restaurant, said, quote, we will reopen on Friday at 11 a.m., even if it means opening with a limited menu. I've been on the phone with suppliers to see what food items are available. According to Abbott's orders, counties with five or fewer confirmed cases, the 25% occupancy limitations are increased to 50%, which includes Ward County, as there are no confirmed cases. As of Wednesday morning, there have been a total of 112 tests given. 108 of those have been negative, 0 positive, and 4 remain pending. Helfen said, Furman's current occupancy is around 155, which is under the recommended capacity, and with the 50% capacity guidelines, this would allow for 75 to 80 patrons. End quote. Further orders lifted restrictions for churches, which may resume services, but with safe distancing methods. Outdoor sports may resume, but are limited to 4 people participating together at a time, golf, tennis, etc. Sole proprietorships may operate with appropriate distancing methods, and all licensed healthcare professionals, doctors, dentists, etc., may practice, but hospitals must reserve 15% of their capacity to be available for COVID-19 patients. Phase 3 would not be implemented until June at the earliest, Abbott said. Quote, this phase would, presumably, allow businesses to return to normal. End quote. There is no statewide requirement for individuals to wear masks in public, though it is recommended. Governor Abbott said, quote, my 4 goals for the state are for Texans to continue practicing safe distancing, for decisions to be based on data, for the most vulnerable Texans to be protected, and for the Texas economy to be reopened as quickly as possible. End quote. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Monahans News on April 30th. Jubentino O. Sanchez, age 77, of Monahans, passed away peacefully on April 24th. Jubentino was born on September 24, 1942, to Manuel and Paula Sanchez in Monahans. He married Amelia Sainz Sanchez on May 5, 1961. They were happily married for 58 years and together had 4 children. Jubentino worked at the Coca-Cola factory over 10 years, Ward County Precinct 1 for over 10 years, and Dowell Chemicals for 13 years. Jubentino is preceded in death by his parents, Manuel and Paula Sanchez, sisters Olivia Sanchez, Mary Garcia, and Rosa Rubio, brothers Eduardo Sanchez Sr., Henry Sanchez, Jimmy Sanchez, Francisco Sanchez, and Robert Sanchez. Jubentino is survived by his wife Amelia Sanchez, his sons, Jubentino Sanchez and Mitchell Sanchez, daughters, Rosemary Sanchez and Paula Cota, all of Monahans, sisters, Josefina Molina and Hortensia Silvas of Monahans, brothers, Samuel Sanchez of Midland, Manuel Sanchez of Monahans, and Gilbert Sanchez of Crane. Jubentino was the proud grandfather to 12 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. Visit our website, CarkeyFunerals.com to sign the guest book or leave a personal note for the family. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home. Jamie Doss McLaren was called to be with the Lord in Odessa on April 2nd at the age of 64. Jamie was born on September 16, 1955, in Monahans. He graduated from Monahans High School in 1974 and served in the United States Navy. Jamie had a very accomplished career in electrical engineering, holding multiple leadership positions and building long-lasting relationships with his co-workers. Jamie is survived by his sisters, Tamara Gardner, and her husband Kenneth of Odessa, and Robin Kilby and her husband Jason of Culpeper, Virginia. Niece Shayla Beard and her two daughters, Morgan and Reagan of Greenwood, nephew Kenneth Gardner and wife Kristen Gardner, and son Jaden of Odessa, niece Lauren Kilby of Culpeper, Virginia. Graveside services were held at 1 p.m. on Wednesday, April 8th. Jamie was laid to rest in Gooseneck Cemetery, located in Graham, next to his mother and father. Visit our website, HarkeyFunerals.com, to sign their guestbook or leave a personal note for the family. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Cindy reading the from the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 7th. Pioneer makes $50,000 in matching ad funds available to locally owned and operated businesses. Businesses may apply online for up to $7,500. Since 1908, the Fort Stockton Pioneer has served Pecos County through depressions, wars, recessions, as well as oil booms and busts. So it is not going to stand idly by as the COVID-19 pandemic rattles our local economy. The Pioneer has launched a local business stimulus program for locally owned and operated businesses impacted by the COVID-19 crisis. The program will offer local businesses the opportunity to receive up to $7,500 in matching funds for advertising campaigns run in print, online, and on social media during May, June, and July of this year. The program comes on the heels on the Pioneer launching its online and print What's Open feature, which provided local business a free listing that they could update in real time, as well as partnerships with the Gonzalez family of Fort Stockton, Rodriguez Legal and the Fort Stockton EDC, and CVB to promote an online dance contest and the Takeout Thursday Challenge contest, as well as up-to-the-minute coverage of COVID-19 news and a weekly Facebook Live broadcast with city and county COVID-19 updates. Pioneer publisher Steve Fountain said the advertising program features $50,000 set aside specifically for Pecos County businesses. "We know how difficult the last several weeks have been for business in our communities," Fountain said. "We've been hit hard, too. With Texas Governor Abbott's announcement that stay at home now expired and Pecos County jumping to phase two of the reopening of the state economy, many local companies will be trying to figure out if, when, and how they can resume business as usual." Fountain said it is critical that business maintain a dedicated ad presence through good times and bad. "This is where we can help," he said. "Many people still aren't sure where to find information on which local businesses, from restaurants to hairstylists, are open and under what conditions. For businesses attempting to reopen, getting the word out will be an important step. During this time, more people than ever have turned to the Pioneer for news and information. So while our business has been damaged like so many others, this is the perfect time to try and lend a hand as our communities work to reopen. Businesses can apply for up to $7,500 or the available $50,000 through the Pioneer at fortstocktonpioneer.com, stimulusgrant.html. Reward offered for stolen nut ranch sign. The green and white nut ranch sign that had stood watch over I-10 near mile marker 283 for nearly 45 years was stolen on April 28th or 29th, with thieves backing a truck or trailer through a fence before cutting through the base of the post and hauling it off, according to Warren Nutt. Nutt said he is offering a $1,000 reward for the sign's recovery and or the conviction of the thieves. Nutt's grandparents, J.L. and Maggie Nutt, bought the 14,000-acre ranch in 1927. The sign was previously an orange and blue Gulf Oil sign before being repainted for the ranch. Anyone with information is asked to call the Pecos County Sheriff's Office at 432-336-3521. New COVID-19 case from TDCJ in 5 unit pushes Pecos County to 14 cases. According to Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster, a 53-year-old female was confirmed this morning as case number 14. She was tested at Malik Medical Clinic on April 28th and has been quarantined at home. She is an employee at the Texas Department of Criminal Justice's N5 unit in Fort Stockton. All 9 of the county's active cases are tied to the unit. 2 other cases tied to the N5 unit were reported last night. Case number 12 is reported as a 28-year-old female employee at N5. She was tested April 29th at a National Guard mobile testing unit in Mertzon. She is self-quarantined at home. Case number 13 is a male offender at the N5 unit who was tested April 29th and is in an isolation cell. The county's first 5 cases, including one from N5, have cleared quarantine and are listed as recovered by the state. After at least 14 days of quarantine, a person takes 2 COVID-19 tests 24 hours apart. Both must come back negative in order to be deemed recovered. Last week, with the county under 4 active confirmed cases, Schuster filed paperwork with the state that allows rural counties with 5 or fewer cases to move from the 25% capacity limit for restaurants and non-essential businesses in Phase 1 of the Governor Abbott's orders directly to 50% capacity allowed under Phase 2. Phase 1 started May 1st, so Pecos County businesses can allow customers inside their businesses at 50% of capacity, a limit that is optional for businesses. A business may allow fewer people inside or none at all. It cannot go above 50%. The new cases do not affect the Phase 2 standing. Under the governor's guidelines, a reversal to Phase 1 would only occur is the county saw more than 3 active cases per 1,000 residents, or about 45 cases, or if the county had 5 consecutive new positive cases. Pecos County government offices return to full staffing and hours, by Steve Fountain. The Pecos County Commissioner's Court decided to reopen its office to public with full staffing by its employees. Under its emergency order, the county had closed the doors of all county offices and were servicing public needs online, over the phone, or by appointment. In addition, staff was rotating work shifts throughout the week. Pecos County Judge Joe Schuster said that county staff will be required to wear a mask when meeting in person with the public. County offices will also require anyone entering the building to wear a mask. He said employees would not be required to wear a mask otherwise in the office. Under the governor's order, we cannot fine someone for not wearing a mask in a county building, Schuster said, but we will ask them to leave. Schuster also said the county was receiving a shipment of several hundred masks that afternoon. He said in addition to the basic over-the-end masks, he also had N95 masks arriving. As soon as we get them, I will hand them out to everybody, Schuster said. With Governor Greg Abbott moving to reopen Texas businesses in phases starting Friday, May 1st, the court left its emergency order in place, but amended it to reflect the governor's directives. Council cuts utility rates 50% again, by Steve Fountain. Moving swiftly to assist local residents and businesses, the Fort Stockton City Council approved a 50% cut in April utility bills and held a first reading of an Economic Development Corporation plan to provide up to $10,000 in grants to local businesses. The utility bills cut in the second time the city has taken the action in as many months. The first cut, affecting March bills, was well received by residents and business owners who receive all or part of their water, sewer, gas, and sanitation services through the city. The April reduction will total $269,755.15. March's reduction was $246,756.07. Councilman Reuben Falcon sought assurance that the short-term reductions would not create a shortfall that might require a substantial increase later. "Is this something that should make us nervous in the long term?" Falcon said, adding that he doesn't want the city to provide a short-term cut, only to require a large rate increase later. Falcon was told that the reductions would not create such a scenario, based on a review of the budget and tax revenues by city staff. "It's time like this that we have to give back to our citizens," said City Manager Frank Rodriguez. "This is what leadership does." The measure passed unanimously. "I feel that we need to continue this for this month as well as at the 50% rate," said Councilman Mike Urita. "This will, in effect or essence, give a full month of service. I think the city has done due diligence in reviewing this and that it is something we should do." EDC plan. The council had its first reading of a plan by the EDC to promote or develop or expand their business enterprise back to the level prior to the economic retraction caused by the COVID-19 national disaster. The proposal would provide grants of up to $10,000 per project and per business. The reading is a required step in granting the EDC approval. It will be up for vote at the council's May 12th regular meeting. A maximum of $400,000 will be available through the program. "I'm just very glad that our Economic Development Board has the foresight to try and help our local businesses," said Mayor Chris Alexander. "We've been real fortunate that our economy has been as such that we have a little bit of money to be able to do that with. I know, checking on other towns, that they are not in the position to do this for their citizens and businesses." In the interim, the EDC has rolled out the application, so businesses may begin the process. "If the council approves this May 12th and we have applications completed and approved, we should be able to start cutting checks by the end of the week," said Remy Ramos, the EDC director. TNMP rejected. The council approved a resolution denying a distribution rate increase request by Texas New Mexico Power. According to City Attorney Pooja Boinpalli, TNP's plan would add an average of $2.79 per month to bills. The resolution also approved the hiring of legal counsel to challenge the request. Water sale. Coming to the aid of the Pecos County, the Water Control and Improvement District No. 1, the city approved a one-year emergency deal to sell water at the rate of $5.43 per gallon to the district. An existing valve will be opened to provide the water to the district. The district previously has denied the installation of new water permits as its system is at capacity. In addition, guidelines permitting the drilling of a well only on land parcels larger than 10.01 acres, has created problems for people owning smaller lots within the district. In other action, the council took no action on its second amended limited shelter-in-place order due to public health emergency. By taking no action, the order will expire at 11:59 p.m. on Thursday, April 30th, with Governor Greg Abbott's new emergency orders taking effect on Friday, May 1st. The city no longer needs its previous order. The Pecos County Commissioner's Court left its order in place, but amended it to match the governor's order at its April 27th meeting. FSHS graduation ceremony remains uncertain, by Steve Fountain. The ability to hold a traditional graduation ceremony might not be known until Tuesday, May 12th, just 10 days ahead of the date set on the Fort Stockton High School calendar. The discussion was part of Fort Stockton ISD Superintendent Ralph Tranum's report to the district school board at its April 27th regular meeting. "We won't know about having a traditional graduation for 2 weeks," Tranum said, citing when Texas Commissioner of Education Mike Morath is expected to provide guidance. In the interim, Tranum, the district was exploring options for virtual ceremonies. "The commissioner granted schools authority for virtual graduations," Tranum said. "We talked about virtual graduation. There are a lot of vendors putting out ideas, or we can put our minds together, put it together ourselves. We have some very competent technology people who could put something together. Ideas for a virtual graduation include setting up the high school's special event center for a traditional graduation ceremony, then assigning each student and family a time to have access to the stage for photos and presentations. The idea of each student producing their own 30-second video to be shown is also being explored, as is playing pomp and circumstance for each student. The district also exploring recording the valedictorian and salutatorian speeches and other traditional addresses. Board member Nacho Dominguez asked if the district could hold a traditional ceremony later, perhaps in June. Tranum said the challenge created with a later graduation is the possibility of eliminating students heading into the military or starting college early from attending the ceremony. "Want to provide something meaningful for the students and parents," Tranum said. "Again, we're handcuffed. We won't know about traditional graduation for 2 weeks. If we're cut loose, we can have the traditional graduation. Everyone wants that." Tranum also said that the district would welcome input from parents on graduation. Holding a virtual or traditional graduation on May 22nd would bring the added challenge of the state's hair salons and barber shops not opening until May 18th, at the earliest under Phase 2 of a plan announced April 27th by Governor Greg Abbott. Honors and sports banquets remain up in the air, according to Tranum.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texans. This is the Recording Library of West Texans, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.